CliffCentral.com. Let's talk movies. You got a lot of talented people in South Africa, and a lot of talented people who've made some incredible movies. And we're going to speak to Sarah Blecher in a moment or two about a movie called Mayfair, which will screen at this year's Africa in Motion, an annual African film festival taking place in Scotland from the 26th of October until the 4th of November. Her recent films are Ayanda and Dis Ak Ana, both of which were released in 2015. Ayanda premiered at the Los Angeles Film Festival, where it received a special mention in the World category and was selected to open the Durban International Film Festival. Dis Ak Ana, which is another movie that Sarah did, won both Best Film and Best Director at the South African Film and Television Awards in 2016. And this is quite a list of credits. I mean, we're talking South Africa's Spielberg with you here. This is pretty damn impressive stuff, Sarah. You must be very pleased with what's been happening over the last few years.
Yeah.
How much work you've put in, and you finally, you know, getting the acknowledgement for really interesting and original stuff. That's terrific. It's hard in the film business.
Very hard in the film business. So, yeah, thanks very much.
Congratulations. Tell me about Mayfair.
Sure. So Mayfair is very different from my other films. It's a gangster film. Mm-hmm. Based in Mayfair, so based within the Somalian Indian communities in Mayfair. Yep.
That's here in Joburg.
It is here in Joburg.
It's a tough place.
Yeah, it was a tough place to shoot in.
You did some shooting there.
We shot the whole movie there, actually.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How much stuff was stolen?
Nothing. You know, it's
such a stereotype.
No, I mean, Mayfair.
It's a dangerous place.
I wouldn't say it's dangerous in terms of things getting stolen and crime. It's dangerous because as the Indian community moved out of Mayfair at the end of apartheid, because it's a Muslim area, there was a lot of space for immigrants to move in.
Right.
Particularly Muslim immigrants, so from Somali and Ethiopia, a lot of Ethiopians live there, came into the area, you know, because there were the mosques and the food and all that kind of thing. So it's caused quite a lot of tension between those different communities, but it also makes the area incredibly interesting. Which was amazing to work there in that way.
This is, I think that the movie will be successful on its own merits. But I always think it's interesting to go into these micro communities in South Africa, because we look at Johannesburg and we go, oh well, you know, the population is this and it's that. But like any big city, it's got neighborhoods that have their own flavor and character, and their own personality, and they've got their own community.
Absolutely.
Instigators and leaders and good people and bad people.
Definitely.
So you're working, obviously, on a movie here, so you can't play around too much. You've got a script, you've got a budget, you've got very tight parameters.
Yeah.
You need to get as much done in as short a space of time as possible. Sure. You've got actors to wrangle. It's tough, right?
Yeah.
How does it actually work from a director point of view? I mean, you wake up in the morning and you have to start shouting at people straight away? I mean, how does it work?
If you start off shouting at people, you're not going to make it till the end of the day. So you try very hard not to shout at people. I mean, so for me, really, directing is wrangling. You know, and it's inspiring, because basically your job is to make sure that all the different creatives that are working on the movie are bringing their best every day. So that the actors are bringing their best, so that the DOP. So literally your job is managing people and inspiring people and making sure everybody understands your vision. So the ship is going in the same direction.
What's the hardest part of that? Is keeping people on time?
No. I mean, I think, you know, the industry is professional enough that people understand that, you know, the time constraints, people are kind of on board with the time constraints.
Is it finding talent?
No, I mean, I think the hardest part of making a movie is being the actor, because you're the person who, you can't have a bad day, you know, you can't come to set and be like, I don't feel like being that person today, because you're the one that everyone's going to see.
That's a really interesting observation, because I would have thought that there are other jobs that perhaps aren't as, the obvious one's the actor.
Yeah.
Because that's what we see when we go to the movie.
Right.
But you're saying they actually deserve to have the position of most credit, because they do the hardest work. They have to be on form all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's the hardest work. I think everybody's got a hard job.
No, no, sure. But you're
saying... I think there's no leeway with them.
You don't have a gray area. Right.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so in terms of finding writers, producers, cinematographers, directors of photography, those kinds of people, are those easy people to find? Because we don't have... We don't have Los Angeles or Bollywood or any of that. So South Africa has certainly got talent, and there are people who've built incredible reputations and careers in South Africa. But are those people hard to find here?
I think what you said first is correct. I think there's a huge amount of talent in South Africa. So it's not – I mean, when you're looking for a DOP, there are lots of talented people. It's whether they're available and it's whether your budget can afford them is what it really gets down to. So, you know, because everybody works freelance, it's managing everybody's schedules to fit in with when you're shooting. But it's also, you know, it's also what is your budget level? And that's what you can afford. And I think, you know, what people don't really understand is the importance of having the international part of the market where people work on international productions, because the international productions have much higher budgets, so they can afford to pay some of the top people more so that they were willing to work on lower budget South African productions because they are making money elsewhere.
Okay, so you can sometimes pull from that international pool as well.
Definitely. I mean, they're South Africans in the end.
Sure.
Yeah, but they're willing to work on South African productions because they've also got this.
And similarly, this is probably why it's so important that your movies get shown at festivals and at these big international events, because you want to access that market too as audience, right?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, we have to. The South African market for films is quite tiny. And particularly, you know, around films that are not in English. So, you know, films that are in vernacular, if you think of the number of people who speak that language, not that they're not going to be subtitles, but that market is quite small. You have to break out of that market within South Africa and internationally.
The budget thing is interesting, because that's what a lot of people in the movie business talk about all the time. It's the budgets, because that's where the...
You mean the budget problems.
Yeah, well, because that's also where it becomes real.
Yeah.
All the rest is, you know, it's people, creative people, talented people doing their thing, dreaming about the possibilities, conceiving of a vision and then implementing it. But the budget's the stuff that pays for the cameras, the lighting.
Definitely.
The... set design, the editing.
Yeah.
You know, the editing has got to be one of the most tough jobs, because that person doesn't, they're not involved in the actual filming some of the time, and you probably do a lot of the editing yourself. But you're in a dark room, you sit there, you watch something over and over again, you decide to cut it here, put this in, move this around, change that.
Mm.
It's really hard work to sit in that editing suite and do that. That's probably where a lot of the stuff happens that people don't even really take, you know, they sort of take it for granted as being part of the movie.
Yeah, I think people that work in film totally understand the importance of editing. I mean, you know, with films, they say that films are made three times. They're made in the script, so the writer sits and makes a film.
Mm-hmm.
And then the director comes on board and remakes entirely what the writer's conceived sitting in their room.
Yeah.
And then the editor takes what's actually been shot, so the actual footage that comes out of that shooting process, and turns it into yet another film. So, yeah, I mean, editing, sure. I have the hugest respect for editors. I don't edit.
You don't?
I don't edit.
You trust them to do it?
No, I mean, I sit with it. You know, the director very often works with the editor.
Sure.
That's a collaborate. Just like the director works with the writer, you know, or the director works with the DOP. Film is collaboration, which is, you know, very different than other art forms, because you don't have a paintbrush and something to paint on sitting by yourself. You've got to work with other people. You can't possibly do it all by yourself.
So what kind of budgets are we talking about with a movie like Mayfair?
You know, you can't ask this kind of question.
Okay, well, give me a ballpark. If I said
to you, so most South African films, most local South African films that you go to the cinema and see are shot somewhere between 5 and 8 or 9 million rand to make a film.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money when you look at it in that way. But when you look at it in the way of what actually films across the world cost, yeah, it's a tiny fraction of what.
It's nothing.
It's absolutely nothing. I mean it's expensive.
If you went to big film producers in America and you said to them, I need a 20 million rand budget, they'd say, sure, let's look in the petty cash drawer.
Yeah, that's low budget.
Yeah.
That's low budget in America, a 20 million rand movie. I mean, because when you take like a 5 million rand movie, you know, what are you talking about in terms of dollars? You know, you're talking about like $400,000. It's nothing to make a movie.
I read somewhere that the special effects budget in something like, and I know you're going to hate this example, but the Avengers.
Yeah, I don't hate that example.
Okay. They must have spent
more than countries' GDPs.
Right.
Yeah.
To do the special effects part of that movie, absolutely, let alone what you have to pay Robert Downey Jr. and company. I mean, we're talking mega money.
Yeah.
Mega.
Yeah.
So for you guys to do these movies, you must feel like you're pinching here and you're saving there and you're scraping totally together something here.
I mean, that's what makes it difficult. You know, you shouldn't shoot a movie in a short amount of time. You should have much more time so that you can shoot a little bit every day. And on these budgets, you can't.
No.
You have to pack everything in, so you're shooting much more every day. It's huge stress. Yeah. It's huge stress. But it's also, I think it's what makes us as South African filmmakers creative. You know, when you've got the leeway of as much money as you want, you don't have to solve problems and be creative. Whereas the way we are, if you don't get that shot on that day, you can't come back tomorrow. So you better make a plan.
Oh,
and that forces a creativity, which is actually quite exciting. So I don't think that's a bad thing.
You love it?
I do
love
it.
You love
it.
I mean, I can tell the way you talk about it. You just love this stuff. Tell me about you. I mean, how did you get into movies?
Sure. How did I get into movies?
Didn't you grow up, you spent a bit of time in America?
Yeah. So I in fact went to high school in America and then decided to go and live in Paris with 25 cents to my name.
It's very bohemian of you.
Totally bohemian back in those days. And then I was in Paris and I was at a party. Quite literally, it was, you know, I was so young and it was like a French party that I finally got invited to.
Wild?
I don't know about, I mean, it was wild. It was
drugs,
really
sex, rock and roll.
Well, you know.
Sure. Paris.
And I was standing there and eventually like one of these filmmaker types deigned to come and talk to me. It was like filmmakers and writers and artists. And he said to me, and, you know, I was so excited. He's like, and so what do you do? And I looked at him and I realized that I was a waitress because that's all I did. I mean,
don't be embarrassed. That's what 90% of the people in movies in America are most of the time.
That's true, but that's all I was.
Yeah, okay. So what did you say to the guy?
So I said, you know, well, I'm a waitress. And literally he like looked at me and turned away and walked off.
Oh.
And I thought, you know, that's the last time I'm ever going to have to give that answer. And I applied to film schools and got into NYU and went back to New York.
Was this a famous filmmaker?
You know, I had no idea. I had no idea.
Okay.
But, yeah.
He could have been.
He could have been, but it was the only person who spoke to me at that entire party.
No, that's so depressing.
I mean, it wasn't depressing because, you know, it sent me to film school. And in a way, I'm thrilled about that.
Did you go to Georgetown for a little while?
I did. So I'd been at Georgetown for the year before I moved to Paris and hated it, really hated it.
Georgetown University is like one of the best colleges in America.
Yeah.
It's in Washington. It's very
conservative.
There's a lot of political and economic studies that go on there. Maybe it wasn't your scene, right?
Well, no. I mean, I thought it was my scene. I thought I was going to be a foreign correspondent at that point.
Huh.
So I was at Georgetown planning on being a foreign correspondent. And it was the year that there was a lot of divesting protests against South Africa and America. So in the college campuses, you know, the college students were saying to the universities, don't invest in South Africa, take your money out of South Africa because of all the sanctions.
The politics, yeah.
And I was involved in those student politics, and the university actually sent the DC cops to come onto campus, like not like the little campus security, like DC hardcore police officers to come onto campus and arrest everyone. And we were thrown into DC jails, which, you know, for me, like a little student at Georgetown, it was quite an eye opener.
That's scary.
It was scary. I think that the people running the DC jails actually supported the protests. So they did things like they wouldn't lock the jail cells with us inside. They were like, you just stay on that side of the line, but we're not going to lock you up. But I was so horrified at the way the university had responded. You know, I thought it was what they were supposedly teaching us was to protest and to question and to work out what was going on in the world. And so I walked out of university. I was like, this isn't something I want to be involved in or something I want to do, and move to Paris.
And then if we fast forward through film school, which you obviously loved and you found this is something you wanted to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You decided then, of all things, you weren't going to go back to America, where you could quite easily have done what you wanted to do there. You thought, no, there's stories to tell in South Africa.
Well, I wish it was that way. What actually happened?
Tell me the truth. What really happened?
So what really happened was that I was working, I was hired by Frontline Television in America to do research on a documentary that they were doing in South Africa. So they sent me back to South Africa.
Oh, I don't want to go there.
No, I actually was kind of excited. It was
all right, I believe you.
It was the early 90s. And so, you know, it was all the political stuff was going on and the changes were happening. It was really exciting. And I came back and interviewed my husband and met him and moved home for him.
How did that happen? Tell me what was his and how did you end up in interviewing him?
That's a movie on its own.
Why did you draw your poor husband into this world of film? What happened? What was he up to?
He was working in he was living in Durban and working as a violence monitor. So he was involved in, you know, trying to understand the violence that was going on and being a monitor, trying to stop the civil war, literally, that was going on in KwaZulu-Natal. And I was going down to Durban and someone said to me, well, if you go down to Durban, you better go and talk to this guy, Steve Collins. So I talked to him.
And you were doing actuality programming at the time.
Yeah, no. So I started off my career doing documentaries. Absolutely. We were, you know, basically my brief when they sent me to South Africa was go to South Africa and try and understand what's going on in the violence.
That's kind of hardcore.
I mean, at that time, you know, now when we look back, we're like, oh gosh, yeah, that's exactly what was going on.
Well, but at the time, benefit of hindsight, right? Totally. Nobody knew what was going on then. It was so complicated. There was Inkatha Freedom Party, ANC. There was the old government. There was the supposed third force. It was complex. Right.
No, it was. I mean, I don't think it was complex. I think everybody knew, but people couldn't prove. You know what I mean? Like everyone knew there was third force involvement in the ANC-IFP conflict. Mm. But people didn't have proof. They didn't have evidence.
I remember you had stories about Gwamashu and Umlazi and some really, really tough neighborhoods.
It was hectic. It was. I mean, you know, it was when you look at there was recently an article in the Sunday Times this last weekend talking about Buthelezi, you know, and trying to like reframe him as like one of the heroes.
He's like this wise elder now, but he wasn't so.
He was responsible for more deaths than like practically anyone under apartheid.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you look at what he did and his involvement in the violence, and I mean, you know, I was seeing that at that time firsthand. You would go into areas and you would see dead bodies left lying on
this
the ground.
This is not a great environment to meet your husband in.
Well, no.
What's wrong with you?
But it was a great environment because you met someone who was trying to do something about it.
No, sure.
You know what I mean?
Is that what attracted you to him?
Totally.
I mean, this guy was just, he really wanted to do what he was doing and made a difference, and you could see he was totally passionate about it.
You know, at that point, he didn't even have a car. He had a motorbike, so he would, and a surfboard.
Wow.
So he would ride into,
it's very romantic,
flipping war zones with his motorbike, where, like, literally a war was going on. Like, I mean, I saw some of those.
Hostels, people with knobkiris and spears and guns.
I mean, the knobkiris and spears were one thing, but the guns were, you know, it really did the damage. And he would be there because he knew that if a white person was there, there would be less killing. So he would go into these situations just to be the white person that would lower the rates of death in those kind of scenarios.
You do like, controversial, complicated situations, don't you? You love telling complicated stories.
I think when I was young, I liked living complicated
stories. Well, Mayfair, look at what you're doing now. It's not like you're telling easy, you're not producing Disney movies here. You're doing some tough stuff. You actually were the CNN African Journalist of the Year in the arts and culture category one year as well. It was in 2003 or something. And you worked with Special Assignment.
Yeah.
You've made a number of documentaries. Yeah. You've worked as a journalist and senior producer for a number of years. Are you happier doing the storytelling in a fictional sense now than dealing with that real hardcore stuff, or do you miss it a little bit?
I think what I do now is both. You were asking about Mayfair and about how do you bring the reality of Mayfair into the reality of the area Mayfair and the reality of people's lives there into the film. And I think that's the thing that I'm most interested in now, is that sort of interface between reality and fiction and how you bring those two things together.
So if Mayfair does really well, we hope it will, already making the right noises and you're being invited to the right places, and what would be the dream outcome here? Would you like this to be nominated for very big awards in America? Would that be a way to kind of get things to the next level?
The truth is, for me, I just want to keep making movies. So each movie I make, if it lets me make the next movie, that's thrilling. I think, we talked about those budget levels. And I think what people don't understand is what a privilege it is to make films. Yeah. It really is a privilege. It's a privilege to get all that money and someone to trust you and say, go and make something that's useful in some way
You build that reputation with every work you do. So if this movie is the one that gets you international recognition, then you can go on to the next kind of movie where you'll probably be given a little bit more of a budget and maybe more opportunity to do the things you really want to do. Where does it go is what I'm saying. I mean, you're a filmmaker who clearly has all the right ingredients. You know how to tell great stories. You know how to put things together in a beautiful way. So it's really now you're competing with the best in the world. How do you get ahead?
I don't know how to answer that question, because I think that when you go and watch a movie, right, what speaks to you is what resonates within your life of that movie.
Yeah, sure.
Like if that movie is talking about...
It's personal.
Yeah, if that movie is talking about like unrequited love and you going through unrequited love in your life, best movie ever.
Right.
So it's so subjective what people like in movies and what people don't like and whether movies talk to them or not.
But what I'm getting at is that there's got to be some practical thing here. I mean, like in America, for example, if you win an Oscar...
Yeah.
If the Academy says you're brilliant, everybody believes it.
Yeah.
And it's not even subjective anymore then, because the Academy has said so.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you have an open checkbook and you've got everybody knocking on your door going, please, Sara, can we have you do this with us?
Yeah, you got everybody knocking on your door until the next movie, and then the next movie is not so good and everybody runs away.
I thought about this when I saw Charlize Theron, because I went through to the Oscars in, 2004, ages ago.
Yeah.
And she won that Oscar for Monster. And I thought, you know what, this poor woman, because all these movies she's done up to now don't count at all.
Yeah.
She's now at the top of her game and she has to keep on trying to top that, which is very important. It's nearly impossible to do.
It's nearly impossible. And also, to be honest, we don't have the same system here. Mm. It's not a question of who made the last greatest movie and then what are you going to do next. There's lots of other complicating factors that get factored into who's going to get money to make their next movie. And in a way, maybe it's because of where I'm sitting in my career, but I think one of the big problems we have in the South African film industry is we constantly putting all our money and resources as a government and as a country in supporting emerging filmmakers. So that people that have made one or two films, you know, whoever they are and whatever color they are and whatever, get less and less support.
Yeah, which is ridiculous because the more experienced they get, the better they get at telling those stories.
Right. And the more they inspire other filmmakers to tell better stories.
And they can hire the new actors and the new... Exactly. They can take a chance because they know what they're up against.
Right. So, I mean, if I look at, like, who I consider to be the best filmmakers in South Africa... They constantly, I mean, they literally have to leave the country to take their careers further. They don't get the support to take their careers further here. And that's incredibly sad, you know, whereas as a government, if we somehow balanced supporting emerging filmmakers, but also supporting established, doing well filmmakers mm-hmm. to continue making better and better films, I think that would be a way of making the entire industry better.
It's such such a strange thing when you make a film because you, it's now in the can, you know what it is, you've seen it, you're proud of your product, you're going around the world, but now you kind of have to do silly things like go to an event and schmooze with people and you know, have drinks and then they see your movie and...
And they stomp all over.
Well, yeah, you get these critic assholes who just want to say horrible things about your movie. How does that feel? Because that's your baby.
Yeah.
And they say, well, we liked this, but we thought that was crap. And you're like, who are you?
Yeah.
You get paid $400 to write a column. Who the hell are you?
Right.
Huh?
You know what it feels like? It feels like when you make a movie, you take your, like, innermost guts and your, like, most private things.
Uh-huh.
And you hold them out and you say to people, okay, judge. You know, which is a ridiculous thing because it's, it's a ridiculous thing. And I think that's one of the things I've learned with all this experience is not to be so affected by those judgments. But it's hard, especially in the beginning.
Have you ever cried?
Yeah, obviously. I think one of the first documentaries I ever made, there was a review. It was the Sunday Independent, and it was the movie reviews.
Who even reads that?
I know, but back in those days, people read it.
All right.
And the back page was the movie reviews, and they're like in huge headlines. I did this film about Charmaine Phillips. Do you remember? She was the Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh right, yeah.
Woman who went on this murder spree with the husband, and. It was Daryl Bristol Bovey, I will completely never forget, who wrote this headline in this review that said, "If I am ever in jail, please don't call Sara Bletcher." And it was so, like, literally this must...
What a shit thing to say. I believe he's in jail right now. Is he still writing for people? He's still got... I don't know.
You don't forget those things because they hurt.
Yeah, of course they hurt. Anyone who says they don't hurt, they're not human.
No, absolutely. They do hurt. And you just get a thicker and thicker skin is what happens when you get older.
Wow. Now, listen, I know all about it. People write things about me all the time.
Yeah. And you've just got to realize it's just one person's opinion. And the other thing, I think, with the... You're still here.
You're still making movies.
Exactly. And also, I mean, you know, with the world the way it is, attention spans are so short that, you know, if anybody... It disappears in 5 seconds into the ether. The way that things appear in 5 seconds, they disappear in 5 seconds.
Yeah, that's also going to be hard because you spend months putting a great movie together, sometimes even longer.
Yeah.
And then it's over in an hour or two for somebody. They see it and they have an immediate thought. And then a week later, they're not even thinking about your movie.
You know, in a way, I was thinking about that because that's true. But it's also not true. So, you know, one of the first films I did was a film called Othello Burning, which was...
I recall that.
About these surfers in Le Montfort in Durban.
Yeah.
And the film recently played in Poland. Someone wanted to screen it at a big outdoor screening. And they screened it, you know, obviously over the summer in Poland. And thousands of people sat on a lawn and watched the film, which was made, sure, years and years and years ago. And loved it. And so, in a way, the thing with film is it doesn't disappear. You know, it's got a life that can keep going on in a way that theatre doesn't. Or live.
It's more like a song in that way.
Yeah.
It's like a recording of a song.
And you can always go back and listen to it. And that's an extraordinary thing.
Well, what do you have to do in Scotland now? Are you going to go over there and schmooze?
In fact, so the film is playing at the Cape Town Film Festival first, which is in early October.
Is that open to anybody, or is it just fancy critics and people who are invited?
No. That's
it's open
actually
to everybody.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite a big, beautiful event this year. It's becoming one of the huge big festivals on the calendar, the film
Good.
Festivals. So it will screen there, and then we will be in London for the London International Film Festival.
That's huge.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm really, really, really excited.
They didn't tell me about that. They just told me about Scotland.
Scotland happens after London, and in between London and Scotland will be the opening in cinemas across South Africa.
Fantastic. So we can go and see it at cinemas across the country, and we can all enjoy the story of Mayfair. And you know, what's the basic idea here? Is it the story of one person? Is it?
It's the story of a father and son. So it's the story of the father is, you know, morally dubious, and the son grows up not wanting to be his father. It's kind of like The Godfather. He doesn't want to be involved in his father's nefarious kind of activities. So he tries to escape. He tries to go into exile to work in refugee camps, working with refugees, eventually forced to come back, and slowly, slowly, slowly gets drawn into the father's business until ultimately, obviously,
he becomes like Michael Corleone. That's amazing. And of course, it's set against the backdrop of this very interesting South African context, Mayfair, the context there, the xenophobia in South Africa. So there are lots of undercurrents.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we go and see it.
Please.
Yeah. Go and support it. And then maybe the next movie, they'll give you even more budget.
Exactly.
I love it. Sara, thank you so much. What a pleasure to meet you. Sara Blecher. And the movie is called Mayfair. It's going to be coming up in South African cinemas very, very soon. So make sure you get to watch that. And congrats on all your other movies. It's amazing. What a career. What a life. It's hard to be in movies, Sia.
Well, look, absolutely.
You can make it
everything
work.
That we hear these days.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. We will catch you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Have an excellent day in the company of cliffcentral.com. And we will catch up then.
Cliffcentral.com.